I think the common thread is this, that Vermont is a place of multiplicity, that people come from all kinds of walks of life. They do all kinds of different things, have many different skills, lots of different experiences, some joyous, some tragedy. But between that, there's this sense of respect for the individual, for what they're doing.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Summer reading is often about traveling to faraway places and meeting fascinating people. But for two Vermont authors, the exotic destination for their new books is their home state. Hardwick author Brett Stanchew's latest book is Call It Madness. It features a young protagonist who journeys to a remote village on a lake in northern Vermont to salvage an old farmhouse that offers answers to mysteries about her family. If her fictional village sounds like the real town of Greensboro, there's a reason. Stanchew is the treasurer and zoning administrator for Greensboro, the resort town perched on Caspian Lake. Stanchew is a Marlborough College graduate and the recipient of two Vermont Arts Council grants, and she was a 2025 nominee for the Pushcart Prize, the prestigious literary award. She's editor-at-large for the Vermont Almanac. For Corinth author Catherine Tudish, the title of her latest book, A Thousand Souls, refers to the population of the fictional village of Neptune, Vermont. The characters include a boy who travels to South Carolina to meet his father for the first and only time, a shy girl who loses her stutter when she befriends a black bear, and a beloved sheriff who breaks up a drug operation only to get arrested himself for aiding undocumented workers evading ICE. Tudish is the author of three books and has taught writing and literature at George Washington University, Harvard, Dartmouth, and the Breadloaf School of English. Brett Stanchew and Catherine Tudish, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you so much for having us. What a pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
Let's jump right in. Brett, we have talked before on the Vermont Conversation, and I know Vermont has been kind of a canvas for your paintings by words over the years. And I wonder if you could just start by talking about how, with your new book, Call It Madness, talk about how your own life experiences inform this story, because I know with your previous book, it was very autobiographical. So of course I am wondering as I read Call It Madness, how much of your life I should be reading into this story.
Such an interesting question. So as you mentioned, Unstitched is a nonfiction book. And after I wrote that book, it is about hard things. It's about addiction in Vermont. And it's also about my own story. After I wrote that book, I really wanted to return to fiction. And my goal for Call It Madness was to really write a book that people love to read, but also had the whole span of Vermont too. And my experience in Vermont is both from Unstitched. So I got to look at a very different side of the area that I live in when I started writing that book, because I did a lot of research. I reached out to people in recovery, reached out to law enforcement. But also around that time, I also became a single mother, and I was also on the school board. And so that kind of upended sort of my middle class life and made me have a totally different experience of what it was like to really scramble. And I was lucky, and I knew I was lucky, to have education, to have sort of the wherewithal to pull myself kind of back into like some level of stability. But Call It Madness really goes across the entire, what I look as like the realm of Vermont. And I wanted to write about a small Vermont village that has people who are very wealthy, who have a lot of intergenerational wealth, whether it's obvious or not, people who are in the middle, and people who are really scrambling in the bottom underneath. And my notion for this book is to write about a protagonist who's sort of experiencing all this, but also within a village. I wanted that whole rural Vermont to be as much of a character as my protagonist, Ava, is.
So I'm reading your book and thinking, Caspian Lake and Greensboro as
Yes.
so maybe say a little about your connection to those places.
Sure. That's another connection that I have too. So around that time, I started working for the town of Greensboro. And the position that I have there is both zoning and both treasurer. It's a complicated position because it deals with money and it deals with land. And through that position, I came to know the town through ways that I had never experienced it before. Before, I just swam at the public beach with my kid. But now I've had the experience of zoning through very complicated projects around the lake where I became introduced to like a level of money that I had never experienced before. I had just never really seen that. But I also had the experience of what it's like to live along the river too. And I became acquainted with people who in different parts of the town are much more hardscrabble, but very much off the beaten path and very much hidden. So Greensboro has this reputation of wealth and also of a literary history, but it has all these other elements of the town too.
Talk about the book's title, Call It Madness.
The book's title comes from a poem by David Budbill, who I, if you don't know David Budbill as a listener, you should know him. He was a poet who lived in Wolcott, who was a terrific Vermont poet with an enormous heart, a great deal of skill, and he was very kind to me. And the line of the poem comes from his book, Judavine, and I use it to refer to madness, to the madness of family, both the crazy making of really the difficulty of family, but also how we're drawn to that as well, too. Madness goes both ways. It's both this human passion and also the same humanness that drives us crazy and the inescapability of that.
What do you mean, how we're drawn to madness?
I think inevitably, and this is one of the joys of writing fiction, is that you can go into these really deep and complicated truths that are not ever a single truth. And the way I look at family is it's very complicated. It goes over multiple generations. So Ava Lavoie, this young protagonist, is looking for the secrets in her family, these actions that both happened to her family and also choices that her family made before she was even born. And she's drawn to really understand what those secrets are because that shaped her life. And yet at the same time, there's this crazy making at the same time because she wants to get out of that and direct her own life. It's like this double bind.
Introduce us to the central characters of Call It Madness.
So the central character is Ava Lavoie. She's 25 years old, and in a nutshell, the book starts in Massachusetts. She's 25 and she's just sort of coasting along in her life. She's kind of drifting along. She's got a boyfriend who she is kind of in love with, maybe kind of not in love with. She's got a job she's not so crazy about. The boyfriend's pushing her to sign on a mortgage. She doesn't really want to do that. And she could just probably continue to coast along in this life and then something unexpected happens in her life. And what happens is her estranged mother, Penny, who she hasn't heard from in almost a decade, phones her up out of the blue and says, "I want you to drive to northern Vermont. Your great grandfather died. I want you to find his ashes." And Ava is stunned by this because she believed the great grandfather, Opa, died years ago and that the house was sold. And the reason this is so important to her is she'd live a life, a childhood of total chaos. Her mother was a very subpar mother. There was a lot of chaos in the sense they kept moving around. There was a lot of drinking. Her mother really didn't have a lot of skills. But Ava had spent 1 week in northern Vermont on this lake with her great grandfather. And he had taught her certain things, like there were birds around the lake whose names she could know. There was a house he told her about that had been built from a boulder that had been split apart and put together. There's the lake and the land around there is beautiful and entrancing, and she's allowed to be a child there. So this 1 week in some ways was the wealth of her life and of her childhood that she believed was gone. So when she finds out her mother lied to her, She starts to wonder, what else in my life has been a lie? And she goes in search of answers to try to figure this out.
Talk about the Vermont of Ava's dreams. She spends a week there, and then it just becomes this mythical place, which I often feel like Vermont is for a lot of people who don't live here. It's a place of myth and dreams and, a place of solace in a world gone mad. But there is a much grittier reality on the ground, as we all know, but also as your characters come to find out. So talk about the myth and the reality that Ava encounters.
I think this is actually really important. So she has this myth or this illusion of Vermont as this summertime place of beauty and peace, of dragonflies on the water, of long, relaxed mornings and lots of flowers. But when she arrives in Vermont, it's the dead of winter and it's very, very cold. And as people who live in Vermont, that's often Vermont. And the entire book takes place in winter. So she arrives and she arrives at this house where she had this illusion, and she immediately discovers that's not true. The house is falling down, it's decrepit, it's filled with dirty dishes, it's overrun with mice, there's no heat, there's no water. She's hungry, she's cold, she ends up sleeping in a tree house. She breaks down. This is her first entry into the village, and a rough young woman who's a single mother with a young son picks her up. But she's not so much a helping angel. She doesn't make her a sandwich. Instead, she's as combative. And all the way along, Ava finds characters. She meets people in the village who are also looking out for themselves. The single mother, Trina, offers to help her, but she wants something in return. The neighbor who abuts the property is very wealthy, but he wants something from Ava too. And so it's a complicated mesh of characters. The people who help Ava out, like an old man who shows up who's a nice fisherman, he offers her almost right away a fish in a bucket as a housewarming gift. And she doesn't realize that this is a gift. And the fish is somewhat important because the night before, with her boyfriend, she'd had this rotten meal of fish sticks and the rice that turned saltless, which had kind of summed up her life. And she ends up in Vermont thinking that, maybe there'll be trout on a platter. But instead, she's offered something she doesn't know what to do with and doesn't even realize that this is what she's given and that it's a kind of gift.
Zoom out to maybe 5,000 feet here. What is the larger message that you're trying to convey in co with these stories?
It's a message that in many ways comes out of my book Unstitched. And it's really, I consider this a very contemporary book. It takes place today. And the book, although it does not appear that way at the beginning, is really about compassion. And it's really about this young woman who's determined to be sort of this American ideal of living this rugged, independent life and grift her way through. And what she discovers is that's absolutely impossible, that the individual does not exist. And for her to begin to experience compassion from other people and have that for other people, it's a skill she has to learn. So she finally reaches, there's a junction in this book where she reaches this point where she can go one of two ways. She can either open up her hard heart and stop worrying so much about her own suffering and see someone else, or she can go another way. And it's an action that's mirrored throughout the book. It's a difficult thing for her to do. There's nothing simple about it. And at its heart, she's trying to really understand her mother and forgive her mother for the hard things that her mother has done to her. But it's never that simple, and it ripples through the other characters who are in the book.
It strikes me as you talk about, we began talking about the real life community of Greensboro, that these rough edges of inequality, of great wealth and, people who don't have much can be the source for explosive conflict, or it can just be this kind of simmering disquiet. I don't know how best to say it. Do you feel like that's part of what you try to capture here in your book?
I think this is a really important point about my book because what I'm really looking for is not one ideal in the world we live in, not just an ideal based on material world wealth, but wealth that goes across the board. So we live in a community or we live in towns that have all kinds of people. And along the way, in my experience, I feel like at this point, I've lived so many different lives, but I've asked myself repeatedly, who really has my back and whose back do I have? And along the way, I've learned that I can rely most on the people who don't ask for flash and don't ask for things back, that that's really a different kind of wealth and a more enduring wealth.
Well, that is maybe a nice segue to when you emailed me to talk about your new book and suggest that we talk about it on the Vermont Conversation. You did something that I think no other author has done, which is you asked to come on with another author to talk about her book, which is a very generous thing. Since we had had a conversation, you knew how to find me. But you didn't just do it to introduce your work. So I was touched by that. And I think you would be the best person to introduce Catherine Tudish to us now and what it is about her work and her as a person, perhaps, that led you to want to speak together about both of your new books.
Thank you. I will say that I am lucky enough to live, I'm lucky to live in Vermont because there are so many good writers in Vermont, many of whom have been so generous to me. And Catherine Tudish, I first came to know her when I was working a number of years ago at the Galaxy Bookshop. And her first novel, American Cream, we stopped and I read it and I loved the book. And I've met Catherine and I've spoken with her. I don't know her enormously well, but I really love her writing. And the book that she just came out with, A Thousand Souls, I also really love because it's a composite of Vermont that goes kind of across the board as well, too. It's a book that reminds me of Sherwood Anderson. And it reminds me of what I try to aim for in my writing, kind of like with Annie Proulx, the same thing. What are all the different sides of a person, and where does that curiosity as a writer lead you to understand people? So, thank you for having Catherine on, and thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, Catherine, let's turn to you in your own words. What inspires you to use Vermont as your canvas on which you paint with words?
A Thousand Souls is actually the first book that's set in Vermont. The first two, Tenney's Landing and American Cream, were actually set in southwestern Pennsylvania, also a rural area. But southwestern Pennsylvania, I turned to originally because that's where my family was from. And as I was growing up, my father was in the Air Force, and so we moved all the time. And Pennsylvania seemed like home because that's where I had grandparents, and cousins, and aunts and uncles, and so on. Although we never actually lived there, we would spend summers there and so on. So I think, in a way, that seemed the most natural place to set stories. However, after I lived in Vermont, I've lived here now for 30 years, but I started feeling very settled and having a real sense of having found a place that felt like my own home, and that was in Stratford, Vermont. There was a joke that probably a lot of newcomers to Vermont hear that you shouldn't say anything in town meeting until you've lived in town for at least 10 years, which I sort of took to heart when it came to writing about the place as well. So I felt that I was very much an observer and kind of taking in a lot about the place in general, this particular small town. And then gradually felt like I feel as if I'm familiar enough to actually start writing stories about this place.
So, as you've been a participant observer in life in Vermont, what stood out to you? What was different than, the many years you spent in Pennsylvania?
I think there's a particularity in Vermont that has something to do with qualities of observation of the people who live here. a very particular kind of sense of humor and a great interest in people who come from away and what we're like and how we behave. And I think that we can be we can be sometimes objects of humor, but I think that there's also a great kindness inherent in people in Vermont, and I was very impressed by that way of Vermonters looking out for each other, and it sort of differences in how you grew up in income and so on tend to fall away if someone is in need of help. And I was very impressed by that. So, if your car goes off the road in the winter, someone will come along and help you. And not just that, but if it's obvious that people are in need of help in any way, help comes.
Can you say more about the Vermont sense of humor? What is distinctive about it?
Well, it's very of the moment, and I can think of one specific example. I had a dog, a border collie, a few years ago, who was not very interested in other people, as border collies can be. He was only interested in me. One day, I was taking him for a walk, and elderly neighbor was out in her yard, and my dog went running up to her and seemed very excited and was wagging his tail and happy to see her. And I said, "Oh, my dog really likes you." And she said, "Well, of course he does." And it's just that sort of spur of the moment kind of way of looking at things that seems to me to be typical of Vermont humor.
All right, well, let's go to A Thousand Souls and introduce a few of the characters to us and why you chose them.
Okay. The opening story involves a boy whose name is Isaiah, and the story actually was inspired by someone a boy that I met. I was working at the K through 8 school in Stratford for a year. I got to know a boy there whose father actually was in prison, and this boy was he was in a way set apart, I think, from the rest of the community because his father was in prison and had been in prison since he was about, the boy was about 2 years old. And it just sort of got me thinking about what it would be like to grow up really not knowing your father when you're in a small town like this, and how that kind of experience can set you apart. And I knew that I wanted to write something along those lines, but I didn't really feel, I didn't feel comfortable writing about someone, a boy whose father was in prison, because partly because I thought it might be too obvious a depiction of this particular boy in the town. And so I chose to have I chose to have the boy be the product of an affair, and so he doesn't know his father, but gets to meet him once. And it sort of started with I just had this image of this boy standing on the railroad tracks on a winter morning with his mother, waiting for the train to come to take them to South Carolina from Vermont, where he's going to meet his father for the first and only time. And the boy being nervous and looking down the tracks, waiting for the train to come. And that's where it started. So it was a combination of wanting to write about someone who doesn't know his father, but also just this image of anticipation and nervousness and so on. That's where that started. So this boy, Isaiah, and his mother, Marion, are two characters who appear in a few of the stories throughout the collection. I organized it pretty much by chronology. So the earlier stories deal with younger people, and as the book progresses, we meet characters who are older. And in fact, we meet Isaiah, the boy, when he's adult and has children of his own. And so as the book progresses, we get to know these people over time. And another character who's important in the book is a girl named Tori that we meet in the second story, Bear. She's a girl who has a stutter that sort of sets her apart. We also get to know Tori as she gets older and has Tori ends up having a very interesting life. She's becomes friendly with the son of a Hmong refugee family that's relocated to this village, which I call Neptune. And they form a very important bond in the story. And she's open. She's open to the experience of getting to know this family from somewhere very different. She's very interested in them. And I ended up doing a lot of research about the Hmong
These are
group.
refugees from Vietnam, by and large, and Laos, that area.
And so this family that she gets to know has, like a lot of these refugees, spent time in refugee camps and had very difficult experiences there. So that comes through in the story as well. And trying to think of other characters I
Well,
might.
let me ask you. The town of
Yes.
Neptune. These are all residents and characters within one town that you've created,
Right.
Neptune. And tell us about Neptune, Vermont.
Okay. Neptune, Vermont is probably based a lot on the town of Stratford, Vermont, where I was living. It also has some things in common with Corinth, Vermont, where I've been living for about 9 years now.
And
So,
we should affirm to people that if they've heard of Stratford but haven't been there, it's probably because of its very famous resident, Noah Kahan, the musician.
that's true. That's true. I actually knew Noah Kahan when he was 3 years old. So,
Well, now some of his cult following is, probably going to quickly attach to you. How did you know Noah Kahan when he was little?
it was the year that I was working at the school in Stratford that I mentioned before. Noah's sister, Sasha, was in kindergarten. And part of what I did there was work with the kindergarten kids in the morning. And that it was a half day program. So Noah's mother would come to pick up Sasha from kindergarten about noon, and Noah would be with her. And so he was a very interesting 3-year-old, I have to say. He seemed very curious and focused and asked a lot of questions in a way that I think other 3-year-olds didn't. So I'm not surprised that I'm not surprised that he's ended up doing something sort of something extraordinary, let's say.
And that he's filling football stadiums of fans for his concerts from coast to coast.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny because I just saw the Netflix documentary about Noah Kahan, and Stafford is very much a character in that. The
Yes.
filmmakers come there and are interviewing two young men about Stafford. What is it like? And, they say, well, nothing much happens in Stratford.
Right.
So you're filling in some of the details, and now you have a whole book about a place where these young men say nothing much happened, but in Neptune, a lot happens.
So many things happen. That's right. I think it's in some ways a typical, I might say, typical Vermont village with a town center of a small population and sort of people spread out in the hills around. The title, A Thousand Souls, actually comes from I was reading some old town records, and that was the way they would refer to the population. They would say Stratford was described as a town of upwards of 1,000 souls. And I just love that idea of 1,000 souls, which somehow gives it extra weight or meaning, other than saying 1,000 people or a population of 1,000.
I want to ask you about the community writing workshops
Okay.
that you run or teach at Blake Memorial Library. Explain what they are.
Sure. Yes. I retired from teaching in 2018. I was teaching at Dartmouth, and after that, I really missed teaching. And I had been volunteering at the library, working at the circulation desk, and I was thinking, well, maybe I could do more than just help people check out books and shelf books and so on. And so I started to think maybe there would be some interest in people in the community getting together to share their writing or to try out writing if they hadn't done it before. So we advertised through the library, and it turned out that several people were interested. And we now have it sort of boiled down to a group of six, and we've been meeting for over 2 years now, and we meet every other week. Several people in the group are writing memoir style essays. A couple of people in the group are writing fiction. And it's a wonderful group. They have just bonded so incredibly well. Their various levels of experience. A couple of people already have MFAs, and some people are just were just starting out when we started 2 years ago. But there's been great kindness and genuine interest in each other's writing, and it's something that I can imagine just going on and on. No, nobody seems to want to stop, so we just keep going.
Well, let me bring Brett Stanchew back into the conversation to wrap up. Brett, I wonder if you could just say what you think is the common thread that weaves together the work of these two Vermont authors, you and Catherine Tudish.
I think the common thread is this, that Vermont is a place of multiplicity, that people come from all kinds of walks of life. They do all kinds of different things, have many different skills, lots of different experiences, some joyous, some tragedy. But between that, there's this sense of respect for the individual, for what they're doing. And it doesn't always mean that the characters in these books are behaving well, but they're struggling in one way or another to try to figure out their lives within this complicated network of the people around them, the village, the rural communities, and the influence of the landscape and how that has shaped this rugged landscape that we live in, that really is above all else the immutable part of where we live.
Well, Brett Stanchu and Catherine Tudish, I want to thank both of you for joining us and sharing your writings and passions on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been a real pleasure.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Brett Stanchu's latest book is Call It Madness. Catherine Tudish's new book is A Thousand Souls. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks so much for listening.